Maine banks, credit unions, and you in a changing world. Chances are you don't do your banking the way you used to. Even if you still go into your bank or credit union branch to make deposits or withdrawals, you probably also check your statement online or at least get an email when your balance is low. Or maybe you're one of those people who does your banking almost entirely on your smartphone. That's what many millennials do. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk about Maine banks and credit unions. What are the differences between the two? What kind of services do they offer that you might not know about? What will a bank or credit union look like in the future? And how are they keeping you safe from cyber fraud? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. When it comes to personal finance, checking and savings accounts, car and home loans, personal loans, debit and credit cards, Mainers have a lot of options. And today we're going to learn about those options as well as what's in store for the future of your bank or credit union. In the studio with me, Todd Mason, the president and CEO of the Maine Credit Union League, and Christopher Pinkham, president and CEO of the Maine Bankers Association. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about banks and credit unions? What kind of services are you looking for? Has that changed? Have you ever switched banks or credit unions? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Chris, Todd, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Good afternoon.
It seems to me, as I travel to other states and cities, that there aren't as many options for personal banking in other places as there are in Maine. Is that so, or is that just my impression? Does Maine have more options per capita than most other places in the U.S.?
Well, historically, Maine has had more financial institutions, partly because of its rural nature and partly over a long period of time because of the size of the institutions. That's changed a lot with consolidation. But I think people grew up with a local financial institution. They did their business there and didn't think of it as being statewide or region-wide or nationwide. That's what
are the big. I mean, I know that there are branches of the big national banks in Maine, but are they? Do they have a harder time getting a foothold here than they do in maybe some of the big cities?
Well, actually, in Maine, those large banks originated here as smaller institutions. And as those banks consolidated, they took on a national character. So they have a core group of supporters and customers that are all over the state. But what happens is, as they start to consolidate their business model, other opportunities come up for smaller institutions that have now grown fairly rapidly. So we have a significant number of banks in the state that are larger than the national average of a bank. For example, we have about 9 different banks that are in the billion-dollar category. That's very significant for a state this size and gives them an opportunity to leverage that capital and do a lot of good things.
Okay. What about for credit unions, Todd?
No, I agree with Chris. I think it's in part the geography of Maine that drives as many choices as there are. And as I look at the national level, Maine versus the national level, we have Maine's a great credit union state. On a per capita basis, I believe we rank number 5 in terms of credit union members versus the entire population. We have about 690,000 members versus what the 1.1, 1.2 million members in this are consumers.
People in the state, right?
People in the state. And we have a long history. I think our first credit union started back in the early 1920s, and that credit union still exists today as Infinity Federal Credit Union. So a long, long history, and I think consumers love what we do.
So if there are 690,000 credit union members in Maine, I'm guessing there are a lot of people with accounts in both a bank and a credit union, if not most people.
Very common to see that. People tend to like the opportunity of putting their money in a number of different financial institutions, whether or not that's historic and they thought that was more comfortable, or whether or not they're looking for rate and price and shopping for different products.
Okay.
Go ahead, Todd. And we see that as well. We see that with members having accounts in a bank as well, and we also see members have accounts in multiple credit unions. It might be, you know, where they originally went to church or where they went to school or where they worked. Strong community base. So we see members belonging to one, two, three, or four credit unions is not uncommon.
All right. I know that both of you represent local institutions, mm-hmm. so you're going to like this question. Give us the sales job. Why is it advantageous to my community, to my state, to keep my money in a local bank or credit union?
Oh, my goodness. That is a great question. The simple answer is because credit unions give back to their communities. We're heavily involved in everything that we do, whether it is charities and helping out with hunger, whether it's CMN, whether it's Habitat for Humanity. Credit unions are there in the communities helping out wherever they can. Other examples, and this is going up into the county area, in Verytime's area, the economic engines of what's happening out there. There's an example of a member from a logging company that needed to update his equipment. And I went to a local bank, and the local bank wouldn't or couldn't lend that particular member, and actually forwarded him to a local credit union to get it, to keep that business going. So it's very important to have local financial institutions, local credit unions there serving the communities and helping the communities out in the way that they do.
Chris?
Let me see if I can put it in terms of numbers. So the industry in Maine, the banking industry, is about $28 billion. The state budget of $7 billion, that will put it in perspective. There are 31 retail banks. 26 of those are headquartered here in the state of Maine. And they have 485 branches around the state. So we're everywhere. Their typical local commitment is that they are going to participate in those community activities. We track that each year. During 2016, banks reported to us their local donations of $11.1 million. That's money plowed back into the community based on their earnings. And something very unique about Maine is that 19 of our 26 Maine-based banks are mutuals. They're co-ops. And so their retained earnings go back into the community as part of their business model. It's a very different and a great opportunity for Mainers to benefit by those charitable dollars.
Okay, so this is one of the things I wanted to get to in today's program, the difference between a bank and a credit union. But let's start with the difference between different kinds of banks. What is, Chris, I'm coming back to you. Tell me about how is a co-op, that bank, different from a traditional bank?
So back in the early 1800s, in fact, one of the oldest mutual savings banks in the country is here in the state of Maine, Sockwell and Benefit Savings Institution. I believe they're 170 years old this year. Those institutions were created using the technical word. They were eleemosynary. They were for the benefit of the small depositors. And those individuals created wealth by putting their weekly deposit in. Christmas clubs, vacation clubs were the next generation of those accounts. Those institutions were developed typically by mill owners, large industrialists, and they never had any stockholders. So they were set up as a cooperative, very similar to the credit union charters. We're fortunate with having 19 of those remaining here in the state of Maine. Nationwide, at one point in time, there were thousands of them. I believe the number is down under 500 at this point in time. But they continue to operate and take their retained earnings and just make it part of their community commitment. We have many of our banks that take 10% of their bottom line, and automatically that's the number that they put into their communities.
If I'm opening a checking account or anything else looking to take out a loan, how can I tell if the bank I'm working with is a co-op model or a traditional model with shareholders?
Well, in general, you won't know because there's no designation, there's no nomenclature or anything else. You could look it up on the FDIC website. I guess you could look it up on the mainbankers.com website, but it's fairly transparent, and it doesn't really change their commitment to the community. Remember, we still have obligations to pump back as much as we can into the communities that we serve.
All right. So your turn, Todd. What is the difference between a bank and a credit union? A credit union does not answer to stockholders, correct?
They do not. And, there are many, many similarities. And Chris laid out, some of the tenets of a mutually held bank. For credit unions, They truly are a cooperative structure. They exist to serve members and not make a profit, and that structure is a fundamental difference. Is where the benefits go, and they go back to the member in the form of better rates, lower fees, and we've done some calculations, and we estimate that somewhere in the neighborhood of about $57 million of benefit goes back to the members of credit unions in Maine, and that's in the form of a lower auto loan rate, a lower mortgage, higher interest on a savings account, lower fees, et cetera. And it's all that economic benefit. So that's a very fundamental difference. The other fundamental difference is the board of directors are volunteers. They're made up of the members. They're elected by the members. They're not corporators. They're not trustees. They are actually members of the credit union that help make the decisions around where that credit union goes and how they serve their members.
And some of the regulations are different, correct? Your banks are federally regulated, while credit unions may or may not be. Is that correct?
Yeah, we both. I mean, and from a regulatory perspective, there are both state as well as federally chartered credit unions, as well as on the bank side. Where one of the bigger differences, although it's very similar nonetheless, is how the funds are protected. So just like on the banking side, where banks are protected by the FDIC, credit unions are also government protected by the NCUA. So every dollar that's put in, $250,000, is protected by the government through the NCUA insurance fund.
How would this affect? Right now, members of the legislature are meeting and trying to craft laws for Maine's new legalized marijuana initiative. I had a conversation with someone recently who said that a lot of the growers and people who may be selling marijuana are looking to credit unions to do their banking because the banks are hesitant to enter this industry because of the federal regulations. Is the person I was talking to right? Is this something we're just going to all try to figure out on the fly? What's next?
There is a lot of uncertainty, and there's a lot of uncertainty because even though as a state level, regardless of where you sit on the issue, it's been legalized. However, at the federal level, it's illegal. So that puts financial institutions, credit unions, banks alike in a precarious position. There are two credit unions in the state of Maine that are supporting marijuana providers, and I really see it as a safety and soundness, a community issue. Without too much exaggeration, the marijuana business, because there isn't the right infrastructure in place, because there's not the right federal guidance on it, we have marijuana providers that are almost literally driving around with cash in their trunk because they haven't been able to find a financial institution. So we've had two credit unions that have stepped up, both state chartered, and are helping those providers in a very meaningful way to be able to give them the financial services they so desperately need.
Chris?
Well, we agree on the issue, but the solution really to the entire banking industry is that as long as it continues to be a violation of federal law to deal with businesses involved in the marijuana business, there are likely not to be any banks involved in that business. We think any institution, credit union or bank, that steps into that area at this point does it at their own peril. We have not seen action yet by the feds in any other states, but there's a suggestion that in states that have had a developed marijuana business that they are starting to look at where they might intercede. I think that's a problem for all of us as citizens, and I think it really is a federal issue that needs to be resolved and quickly, because Maine's going to want to start recouping as much income as it can from that new business, and if we don't have guidance, I do not believe any of our institutions will be changing their current policies.
Yeah, and that's right. And I think on the taxation issue, the marijuana providers, as long as it remains a tax business outside of the normal financial services channels, it'll be very difficult to be able to track and tax the income coming in. So we definitely need federal guidance.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I want to talk about the future in banking. I have Children who do all of their banking on their smartphone. I like to drive through and talk to my local teller. Is the future really all virtual?
The future is all of the above. Customers are demanding instant banking services. They want mobile services, yet we still find branches are appealing to people.
And there are new branches sprouting up all over all the time.
They are, and they're different. They're going to be very noticeable innovations in how they look, the number of employees they have on duty, and the type of technology that they've put in place. That's the changing face of the retail part of the banking business. What we do have is, I think, now a much broader array of services trying to appeal to all age groups, trying to figure out what that millennial crowd is going to want in the next 5 to 10 years, trying to find out what the boomers need at retirement or shortly into their retirement. It's very challenging for the entire industry, but I think you're going to find a wider variety of services from more institutions. It's the only way we can keep our customers.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there was a study by PwC that reached out to consumers, and they measured that somewhere about 46% of consumers are now interacting digitally and only digitally with their financial institutions.
Only digitally.
Only digitally. Then the numbers are crazy. And the number just goes up even higher when you're talking about that that younger demographic. But at the same time, to your point, branches still continue to be important. So 62% said, yeah, I just want to do all of my banking in digital form, but I still want to have access to my branch. And I think that you know, the high-tech, high-touch elements are still going to be around, and the way the branch is going to change is going to be dramatic. We've seen a lot of our credit unions beginning to change the way when you walk into a lobby. You know, you still see the traditional type of walk up to the lobby, but there's some that are creating these pods where the member and the member service rep are standing side by side and having a conversation. And I think that's where we see the evolution of branching going, where the member and the member service rep, it's more of a guidance, more of consulting. They're working together. It's not the transaction anymore. It's the guidance. It's how, help me with the difficult decisions I need to make.
The member service rep, is teller an antiquated word?
Well, you know, it's credit unions tend to have their own language, and it's member service rep. Sometimes, of course, it's teller. They often are one and the same. But it's a part of the unique language of credit unions.
Okay, we have so much to talk about. I want to ask about Bitcoin. I want to ask about small business lending, but we do have to go to a break. We're talking about banks and credit unions in Maine. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do BCM, Environmental and Land Law of Northern New England, helping landowners, farmers, and governments problem solve, nhlandlaw.com, and the City of Gardner's 95-295 Business Park, where your business can grow and your family can thrive. Grow with Gardner.net. And Mid-Maine Restoration, specializing in steeple and tower restoration throughout Maine and New Hampshire for over 25 years. Maine-steeplejacks.com.
Whether you listen for a few minutes a day or a few hours,
Africa is facing an invasion by something called the army worm.
Could you be more material about what you mean, Ambassador, when you say...
Authorities are looking into another incident of vandalism at a Jewish cemetery. Police...
One of the points you make is that these are people who often come from groups who have traditionally had a lot of power and privilege.
Whether you listen for hard news or just fun.
You were in your car humming what has become one of the most iconic themes on television right now.
And it's obvious you can't. Can't play piano.
I really sound like a squeak toy on some of that. You know,
thank you. You have such a soothing voice.
Well, that's very nice if you're coming from a radio professional.
When you listen to NPR, you trust us to be a part of your day, to bring you news and information that's important to you. Help us continue to be the station you count on. Become a sustaining member of this station for the very first time. Now more than ever, we need your help.
Super Thursday coming up August 10th, this Thursday. You can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Hi, it's Mark Vogelsang of Maine Public Radio. You know, every day we provide you with a kind of deep, independent journalism that you count on and trust. And you know it's listener support, your support, that plays a crucial role in keeping this NPR station strong and healthy. So please stand up and be counted this summer on our one-day Super Thursday fundraising campaign to pay for the news. Of course, you can pledge online right now and have it count toward our Super Thursday goals at mainpublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what's new in the world of banking and credit unions in Maine? Joining me in our studio, Christopher Pinkham, president and CEO of the Maine Bankers Association. And Todd Mason is president and CEO of the Maine Credit Union League. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to our calls, though, I want to talk to you guys about fraud. This is a topic we bring up from time to time on Maine Calling, but it's really, really important. Chris, we were just saying, you say people get annoyed when they get a new ATM card in the mail and they have to call up and verify and pick a new password. And you say, no, don't be annoyed. We need you.
We do. And it's really a dangerous world out there in the cybersecurity area. There are a lot of bad people who really want to compromise your financial accounts. And we really need consumers to be as vigilant as possible for those situations. About a year ago in Maine, we had a number of skimmers attached to ATMs. Actually, it was the first one was found by a consumer who wiggled the outside of the skimming device and found out that it fell into their hands.
For those of us who did not follow the news, or for those people out there who didn't follow the news, this is amazing and shocking. Tell us what a skimmer is.
So one of the ATM machine companies had a theft of some internal diagrams, and some bad guys put together a skimming device that slid over the existing insert for the credit card. And that device was not easily detectable. And it was put in for a couple of hours. It actually had a camera that read the PIN number that was being used and recorded. And that happened first. We saw it in Pennsylvania. It worked its way up through New York, New Hampshire, and it finally came to Maine. And ultimately, when it came, we were in disbelief because the way it was actually found out was that someone was able to shake the outside of the unit and it came into their hands.
So someone using the ATM thought, this doesn't seem right.
Exactly. So when you come up to an ATM of any type, make sure that it looks like it's a legitimate ATM. Also, you have the situation where people are going to ATMs where the card skimmer doesn't seem to work quite right. That's another reason. Go into the store if it's a retail store, or consider using a different terminal. I think generally you'll find that credit unions and banks are very diligent about checking on their ATMs. That may not always be the case with privately owned ATMs, and we have many of those here in the state of Maine. So consumers just need to be vigilant.
And you want people just check your statement.
Oh, that's the other piece. So many times we find out from people 2 or 3 months after there has been a fraudulent transaction put on their account that they finally looked at their statement. And in this day and age, it is important for people to regularly check their statements. Most credit card companies now allow you to put warnings on so that if there's an expense of more than a certain dollar amount, you can receive a message on that. We urge people to consider those things. We are doing as much as we possibly can as an industry. Law enforcement is very helpful in working on this, but the bad guys are everywhere, and we really need to work together on this. The industry works together, the credit unions and the banks. We have a number of working groups that meet regularly with law enforcement, trying to detect and anticipate what might happen, but frankly, the fraudsters are really good at what they do.
Yeah, and the issue is not going away. In 2015, on a national or international basis, it cost somewhere about $3 trillion and is expected to go up to about $6 trillion by 2021. So these numbers are big. These attacks aren't going away. And some of the things as credit unions, and I'm sure I know banks do much the same thing, there's no single silver bullet. It takes a multi-pronged approach. Credit unions invest a lot of money in training their staff so that they are aware of potential security issues. They have numerous processes and controls in place, monitoring and detection, and of course, the blocking, the firewalls and the intrusion protection and so on. And these are the same kinds of things that consumers should be doing. They should be educating themselves on what the latest attacks are, being ever vigilant, as Chris pointed out, and looking, whether it's an ATM machine or at the gas station. If something looks funny, it probably is funny. And then getting things like identity theft protection and so on. It's not just the credit union's issue to deal with. It's not just the bank's issue to deal with. It's the consumers and our members have a major role to play in terms of the protections of themselves.
I'm going to go to the calls now and start with David calling from South Berwick. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. I started banking at the age of 5 through Maine Savings Bank. When you send a dime a week in an envelope, and they'd collect. And if you did a good job through the year, got to go to Maine Savings Bank, have punch and cookies. So I did that from 5, and every bank that's bought Maine Savings since, now it's Bank of America, I've gone with them, and the only thing that's grown is my number. And I like doing that.
David, thanks so much for calling. I love that you said you started at age 5, because I know for both of you, reaching out to youth and creating financial literacy programs for youth is a big priority. The world's a lot different, I'm guessing, than when David opened his savings account when he was 5.
Yeah, we have a staff member that's dedicated to youth outreach and youth financial literacy. And we have financial literacy fairs all over the state on a regular basis. And they're really cool events. Credit unions will come together, whether it's in a school gymnasium or a college campus or wherever youth gathers. And they set up kind of almost a mini economy, where students will choose a career and they'll walk and they'll set up a budget and they'll walk through what it's really like to be an adult, and it's and paying bills and making money and investing and doing all the things. And it's just a great way to educate youth on what it means to be an adult and what it means to have good financial literacy and good financial habits. And we think it's important. We think it's important because it's not taught in schools typically. And that's one of the fundamental tenets of credit unions and the way that credit unions give back.
Are the fairs coming up?
Yeah, they're coming up. We can share the dates on the Facebook site. And there's also, kind of talking about the millennials and new ways of serving the youth. We even have the ability for the youth to jump onto a website and take that financial literacy fair in a virtual environment. There's nothing like face-to-face, so we'll never stop doing that. But, you got to be anytime, any place, any device. That's just kind of our commitment to
financial literacy. Todd, that would be great. Yeah. Anything you can put on the Maine Calling Facebook page about financial literacy for youth. Chris, are you finding that young people maybe don't have the skills that they did a couple generations ago because the world's so much more complicated?
Well, David referred to school savings programs, where there were little programs in the elementary schools that brought people into the idea of saving. I think what we have found is that they are very interested in the economy, young people today, and junior achievement has been a way that we've been able to work with a lot of high schools, bring students into programs and bring in bankers as mentors for them. And that type of learning does seem to appeal to that generation in a way that has made them excited about either trying to build a business model or, in fact, being able to take their skill set and use it into a career. We recently rolled out a program where we were going to all of Maine's colleges and universities and talking about banking as a career. We tied it in with a scholarship award, and we found that many of the colleges and universities hadn't considered bringing a bank into a jobs fair, because they didn't realize that we had 9,500 employees around the state. And you think the number of branches that we have and the locations that we have, it's a real opportunity, because many people who work in banks today have been there for their entire career. The opportunity to find a career path, to be able to have banks fund additional educational programs for them, and to build a career ladder has been very appealing. And we no longer need people with just financial background. the world of cyber and the technology, retail sales. There are so many different components to the industry today that we need all types of degrees and backgrounds. So as we've worked with high school, we've learned very quickly that if they think about banking as an opportunity, as a career, it really does change the whole discussion.
And it's Chris is right. To go personal for a second, my daughter will be a sophomore in college, and she's doing an internship at one of our local credit unions. And it's such a great experience for her. I mean, as an intern, you can imagine the type of work that she is doing, but the exposure to the good work of her credit unions and being able to interact with professionals has really opened up, I think, her mind in terms of what a good career option is, and hopefully she'll keep with the family business.
We'll go to John, who's calling from South Bristol. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Jennifer. I just picked up on my car radio, and this has been talking. I apologize, but as I understand it, credit unions were originally established to serve underserved communities like a mill or a neighborhood, or in my case, I belong to Navy Federal Credit Union when I was on active duty with the Navy. It seems in the past few years they've expanded much beyond the small community that they were established for, and you see countywide ones and all government employees and so on. And along with this, credit unions, I feel, have a tax advantage over our community and commercial banks here in the state of Maine. I would just like your panelists to comment on this, and I'm going to sign off and listen on my car radio.
Okay. Well, John, thank you so much for your call. Interesting. Is that true? Is the history, Todd, of the banks serving the underserved?
Oh, absolutely. That's credit unions. That is where they began way back in the 1800s as a way to give workers access to credit. And that philosophy, that basis, has held true ever since. And while credit unions don't pay corporate income tax, they do pay property tax, sales tax, and employment tax. But because of the not-for-profit status, they are able to provide, again, the better rates, the better fees as part of that. But there's some limitations when it comes to not-for-profit. There are certain things that credit unions can't do that banks can. They can do. We can't invest in stocks. We can't raise capital outside of our membership doing deposits. So there comes a price with being the not for profit and not paying corporate income tax. But absolutely, credit unions pay taxes.
It's always a touchy subject to bring up taxation with banks. The credit unions do have a distinct advantage, and our caller, John, I recall, raised the issue of the growth of credit unions. In Maine, we've had an explosive growth of credit unions in terms of their size. I believe they represent about 17% of the marketplace now, up from under 10% only 20 years ago. As they have grown, changed their charter so that they're able to serve a broader population, for all practical purposes, people can go to any credit union. There's almost always an opportunity for them to find some nexus so that they can become a member. Banks, on the other hand, have always had to pay their share of taxes. We estimate the Maine banks this year will pay somewhere in the $60 million worth of taxes to state and federal taxes that they owe. And, of course, the credit unions don't have that obligation. Now, that's about a 35% tax bracket in terms of our earnings. And we think that our commitment to making our share of the contribution to education and transportation, DHHS, all of the state revenues, is part of our responsibility of being in the community. And so the open question really for legislators, not so much in Maine but more on a federal level, is – has the world changed sufficiently so that credit unions would have to step up and start to pay taxes? Just a point of history, mutual savings banks that I mentioned earlier in 1950 were tax exempt. Over a period of 4 years, the federal government phased them into regular tax-paying banks. So there is a historical note as to how that can be done. We stand ready to watch and see how that plays out.
Yeah, and at the same time, and obviously this is an area of discussion that Chris and I both feel pretty passionate about. But that same piece of legislation and throughout the history, the tax when the federal government has looked at the tax issue for credit unions, they have carved credit unions out for a very specific reason, and that is because of the social good credit unions do, and providing lending, providing access to credit. In places that that banks typically don't. In terms of, in this last year, credit unions in the state of Maine did about 23,000 loans that are $2,000 or less. Those are typically loans that banks are not interested in. And it's that access to credit, that access to, my earlier comments around credit unions being in areas where banks typically aren't providing loans in areas that banks typically won't. That's why credit unions are tax exempt, because they exist not for profit, but they exist for people and making sure that the members get the full benefit.
Well, we do have to take another break, but before we do, a word about tomorrow's show. We are going to talk about the pop rock music scene in Maine. We have musician and singer-songwriter Spencer Albee, Guster's Adam Gardner, and Amesel Ponte, who's a music writer and host. I would love to hear your thoughts ahead of time, if you'd like. What music acts are you excited to see this summer? Which venues are your favorites? You can go on our Facebook page, send us a tweet, or an email at mainpublic.org. So that's tomorrow, Music in Maine. If you'd like to comment or question, if you have a question about credit unions or banks in Maine, you can also send us an email, talk@mainpublic.org, post on our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and installation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Okay, the four just aired. They're working on the 4:30 now.
Jack Spear is part of the team that brings you live NPR newscasts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Their job is to condense everything important that's happening in the entire world into just a few minutes, and they have to do it fast.
The newscast unit does a certain amount of work in a certain finite space. We have a very small space in which to tell as many stories as we can, and that happens every day.
So I'm going to do the DeVos confirmation, kind of working as we go.
That being said, if we can't verify something where we can't get a definitive answer that this is true and that we know this is true, then we'll hold off. We'd rather be right than fast.
The cost of a 24-hour news cycle doesn't have to be accuracy. When you give to the station, you're not just helping us report the news quickly, you're also helping us report the news accurately. Support fact-based journalism. Become a sustaining member of this station for the first time today. And thank you.
Super Thursday is coming up this Thursday, August 10th. You can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475. Coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon, Climate One, focusing on, is climate denial destroying our planet? At 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Maine's credit unions and Maine's banks. Here, Todd Mason, the president and CEO of the Maine Credit Union League, and Christopher Pinkham, president and CEO of the Maine Bankers Association. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. I know you both want to talk about the Senior Safe Program. What is that? Chris, Todd, who wants to explain it to us and what it does to protect people in Maine?
Let me explain the origins. We were aware about 4 or 5 years ago that a fairly old system the state had for calling in problems with seniors who seemed to be in a situation of being exploited really had taken a backseat in terms of priorities. Took a couple years, the Credit Union League, the Bankers Association, as well as state government, all working together, created this new program or a new view of this program called Senior Safe. The theory is that frontline representatives at credit unions and banks have a series of red flags that they are trained to observe. And if they see someone coming into the branch, hypothetical, someone comes in regularly every other Friday, they take out $200 or $300, and 1 week an elderly woman comes in with two young adult males and wants $10,000 because her roof needs to be fixed. So our system is that they are able to divert this person's attention, possibly tell them they don't have that much money, and get an opportunity to talk to them and see whether or not we need to talk to Adult Protective Services, whether or not we need to bring in legal services for the elderly. But the bottom line is we have a single 1-800 number that we can call. It's located within the Bureau of Securities in Augusta, state agency, and they're in a position to really monitor those calls, find the right resources, and help us find a solution. We've already had in the first, we're almost into our second year now, a number of very visible success stories. We're able to shortchange what was happening and take action. It's given frontline people a great deal of relief where they can go to someone. But more importantly, it's been an opportunity to train really hundreds and hundreds of frontline people around the state so that they can identify these situations, particularly when they're happening to vulnerable seniors.
And Todd, we had a conversation with someone from a credit union here on Main Calling who said you would not believe how many times this comes up.
Oh, it's horrible. And Senator Collins has really led the way on the senior safe issues, and we've been very supportive of her on this issue, along with overall legislation, just because it's heart-wrenching. I mean, you hear stories of, you know, simple ones, not so simple, of, you know, a snowy day, someone shows up on a senior citizen's doorstep with a shovel. She thinks it's, she thinks it's just someone being neighborly. Please shovel my snow, and comes back and forcibly says, write me a check, pay me money. And it was a credit union that was able to step up and help put a stop payment on the check. Or someone recognizing that a relative has a power of attorney, but there's negative balances on the senior citizen's account, and they recognize that. And they can now safely call a number to report those things to help protect the senior citizens. Very important legislation, very important issue to support to protect our senior citizens.
We have an email from Leah. I'm curious what percentage of banks and credit unions in Maine are headed by women, more at one than the other. Can the panelists explain the rising management structures behind these numbers?
Wow. I don't have the exact numbers, but I can tell you anecdotally the credit union system in general and specifically in Maine typically attracts more females for whatever that's worth. I don't have hard data behind it, it's very, very strong in both genders, but typically a little bit stronger on the female side.
Two of Maine's 26 headquartered banks are led by women CEOs. I would say the majority of senior management teams in banks are close to 50-50. If not skewing slightly more female. I think we're on the cusp of seeing a lot more women rise to that senior position, but it takes many years of career development for people to work up the ladder to be in that position of background and experience.
An email from Greta. Please speak to public banks, such as the Bank of North Dakota, which has been in existence for nearly a century. There's been legislation introduced to the Maine legislature to establish a Maine public bank. When two-thirds of Maine revenues are invested out of state in privately held banks, which make profits for their shareholders and not for the common good of Maine citizens, it is past time for a public bank of Maine.
Well, North Dakota has the only state-run public bank in the country. Its origins go back to the early part of the 1900s when it was put together based on the original deposits from the minerals that were located in that state. It has grown to be a resource for a lot of banks in that state. It looks a lot like bankers' banks that have been built around the country where they provide back office services. Interestingly enough, they are the only ones that have been created really in 100 years. A number of states, including Maine, have addressed this two or three different times. I would say in the last three efforts here in the state of Maine, the state treasurer has opposed the creation of the state bank for two reasons. One, the inability to have it do all the things the state of Maine needs, and secondly, because of the risk profile.
Okay. We'll go quickly to Melissa, who's calling from Cumberland. Hi, Melissa. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about security. I've always used credit unions. I'm very happy with it. I'm a little disappointed that the one I belong to right now is merged with one in New Hampshire in the process. But my question about security is about signatures on the back of all the cards, debit card, credit card, bank card, whatever. I've never had anybody look at it or check it and I've used cards that aren't signed. I've used other people's cards with permission, of course, and I have had a teller tell me, you can scribble anything on there, doesn't matter. Men just put a straight line, women sign. The signature never seems to matter. Other security I've never had a problem with. Out of state, it asks for a zip code or something. But what's with the signatures? Why do they
Okay, I'm going to have Todd answer that. Todd, does the signature on the back of your credit card or debit card matter anymore?
They do matter, or at least they should matter. And I think that's, you know, it's really where education comes into play at all levels. For you recognizing it as a member of a credit union, and thank you for your membership, recognizing that that's an issue. The merchants that you do business with need to recognize that is an issue, and they need, if you don't have an ID or if you don't have that signature, they should be checking your ID. So they do matter, and they should matter. But I think the other elements go back to what we were talking about earlier, and making sure that you have protection like the identity theft or setting up alerts on your credit cards. So if someone uses your credit card fraudulently, you still have protection.
We'll go to Felix and Milo. Let's see here. What's going on?
Hi,
all right. Hi, Felix. Go ahead.
A simple question. Suppose I had $500,000. I put $250 in a bank insured by FDIC. I put $250 in a credit union insured by NCUA. If the system crashes, do I get $500,000 from the government or just $250?
Oh, you get the $500. They're both protected. Individually.
Felix, I would also add that the FDIC, although it's a government agency, is funded exclusively by premiums paid by member financial institutions. 100% of the banks in the state of Maine are FDIC insured, although that wasn't the rule 25, 30 years ago. And those banks pay a premium on an annual basis to fund those dollars. People often say, well, back in 08, the government had to bail out some banks. Well, the government actually loaned money to those banks, all of which has been paid back with a handsome dividend right now.
And the credit unions, just for clarity, are operating in a very, very similar fashion. Credit unions pay to go into the insurance fund, and so it's not consumer funded. It is funded by the credit unions.
Felix, thanks for your call. We'll go to an email from Martha. Do credit unions offer basic financial planning advice as it relates to the timing of drawing on retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks, pensions, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to something I mentioned earlier, credit unions operate on cooperative principles, and one of the cooperative principles is education. And so absolutely, credit unions can provide good financial guidance in general on retirement and related issues.
All right. So we're going to go to Margie in Jonesboro. Margie, we're tight on time. If you could be quick, that'd be great.
Okay, I'll be quick. I was office manager and treasurer of the University of Bridgeport Credit Union. And the credit unions are of the people, by the people, and for the people. I moved to Maine, and I belong to the Down East Credit Union, and I think they're wonderful. And I helped a lot of people when I was in Connecticut. And that's all I want to say is I think credit unions are great. They're for the people.
Thanks for your call, Margie. I'm sure you appreciate it, Todd.
I do. Yeah, you said it way better than I ever could. Thank you.
Okay, so right here at the end of the program, when we don't have much time to talk about it, I want to ask about a new word I learned today, cryptocurrency, which is a fancy word for saying things like Bitcoin. Is this the future of banking? Will we see at some point, Chris, Bitcoin?
You will. You will see
in our
it.
Banks?
Well, I'm not sure you'll see it in the banks, but you'll see it in different forms. This is an innovation that is taking over a lot of the headlines, but not really in practical use because it varies in terms of its value. The whole fintech world is targeting the banking industry because they'd like to do a lot of services that we provide without the regulatory structure that we
the
have
to
pay.
The whole fintech world?
Yes,
another word.
That's another show for you.
What is the fintech world?
Well, it's everyone who's trying to do banking services without being a bank. And it's consolidation of student loans. It's providing startup money for businesses on the internet without a background check and a business plan. It's a series of companies that the IT world has really spawned, and some of them have done very well, and others have been noticeable failures. So it's a new challenge to those in the financial services business who are tightly regulated. Credit unions and banks have regular examinations, regular rules they have to play by, and a lot of people would like to pick off certain parts of our business and provide it without all those regulations. That's the challenge to elected officials, is to figure out how to level the playing field.
Okay, and I want to ask you, Todd, what else? You know, I don't think 50 years ago people foresaw ATMs coming. I don't think 20 years ago people foresaw being able to do banking on their smartphones. What's coming next that most people haven't even imagined yet?
Oh, my goodness. This is such an exciting time to be in this industry, to be a member, to be a consumer, just because of what is already happening today and where it's going. I think one of the next things that we'll see is the use of data, artificial intelligence, to proactively provide guidance and education based on your financial habits, based on what you spend, based on what you invest, and using the technology to help us all be smarter and make better decisions, and a whole lot more to come. But I think that's one of the things that I'm excited about.
Okay, what about you, Chris? What are you excited about?
Well, I think we're becoming more counselors. The recent survey, 50% of banking customers want advice on both investing, how to manage their money. Todd talked about budgeting responsibilities. Young people want that. People who are reaching close to retirement age want that. And I think those services were not traditionally part of just the over-the-counter transactions. That's the new era. We need to deliver that both electronically and in person. That's a big challenge.
Well, thank you both for being here today. You just heard Christopher Pinkham's voice. He's president and CEO of the Maine Bankers Association. And Todd Mason is president and CEO of the Maine Credit Union League. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had technical help from Nikki Shields. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, at mainecalling.net. And today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. As I mentioned earlier, tomorrow on the program, the pop rock music scene in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.